Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to The Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Joining me tonight, it's my good friend Nate Tice. Nate, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very, very well. We're live in person, not on Radio Row, at the actual Super Bowl with a wide open stands behind us. We got the go-ahead to do a show right now after we just got told, as the countdowns happen, that we might have to move. So here we go. So no, the show's doing great. I am doing fantastic. It was a wonderful game, an interesting game, but also an interesting experience as we sat here waiting to do the show, because I saw a lady pushing a cart that you and I are still trying to figure out what was that about.
The post-game Super Bowl chaos is always great. We saw a woman in a strange hat pushing a cart. It made no sense. Chris Jones's mom.
Yes, Chris Jones, very nice.
Yes.
The whole family is very nice. No, the cart was just, it was a unique cart situation. But another one I saw a drunken Chiefs fan going from vendor to vendor as they're trying to close up, and bribing them with over $1,000 trying to buy beer. Went to three spots as I'm following him because I'm going to the bathroom.
Famously, you can't buy beer after like 9 p.m. Yep. in Vegas. So if he goes anywhere else, it's going to be really hard for him to get a drink.
Super expensive. Might as well just do it in the casino. Maybe if you gamble a little bit, you can get it for free. But that was what I was waiting to say, because I saw that and I followed him. So I'm going to the bathroom. There's three in a row. He went, it was like 200, 500. Third one, he went 1,000. Didn't get it, but yeah. Very, very interesting Super Bowl here in Vegas. It was awesome.
The Super Bowl in Vegas had two inevitabilities. One, a lot of people being very drunk and doing silly things.
Yep.
Two, Patrick Mahomes showing up like he did in the biggest moments.
Of course.
The Chiefs win this game 25-22 in overtime. And it almost felt kind of like the Chiefs season, in the sense that we had some frustrating moments. You know, the MVS had the play where he ran backwards. Guys weren't getting open earlier in the game. Mahomes seemed to be running for his life. The offense was uneven. The running game wasn't good the entire game. They had a 27% success rate on running back runs. So it felt like that old Chiefs team, the Chiefs team that we had seen for the entire season, had come back in the Super Bowl. And then as the game goes on, as the adjustments happen, again, they somehow find a way on the final drive of the fourth quarter and the final drive of overtime. And now this guy has three Super Bowl wins in four trips in his first six seasons, three Super Bowl MVPs. Two guys ever have won at least three. Joe Montana, Tom Brady, and now Patrick Mahomes. And the company he now keeps among those guys feels right.
Yeah, and it's before 30 again.
He's 28 years old.
Yeah, 28.
That's all I tweeted after the game. He's only 28 years old.
Only 28. I think how many times you sat next to me and Vic sat on the other side of me. I don't know how many times I said, this is the dumbest good team I've ever seen about the Chiefs. The drop by Pacheco on the toss play to start the second
half.
Oh,
my God. I hadn't gotten back to my seat yet. I saw it as I was walking back. I was like, you have to be kidding me.
Because I think what you said, you're like, second and 12? But you're like second and 15 or something,
they had so many negative plays on first and 10 to start drives, especially early in the game. It just felt like they were putting themselves consistently at a disadvantage way too often.
And this is the same team, as frustrating as that offense is. And at times, sometimes, you know, you got some gashes on the defensive side. I know we'll get to that. Then you have Aaron Schatz, formerly of Football Stars, now with FTN, tweeting, the Chiefs went through the toughest postseason ever in terms of DVOA. That's what that team did. And so it's like, maybe that's why I looked a little sloggy, because they're going through a tough schedule. But the fact that they can do this with Mahomes and figure it out, you could feel it in the moment. I know, probably see it on TV, but even here on live, you could just feel when the light bulb went on for Mahomes in this offense. It was just like, again, he's inevitable, but sometimes it takes a quarter, sometimes it takes a drive. This game, it felt middle of that third quarter, it's like, oh, here comes the Chiefs offense, because Mahomes just start clicking everywhere.
He's now 15-3 in the playoffs. And this was supposed
to be. He wins as Manning already. I saw that.
15-3 in the playoffs.
Which is,
this was supposed to be the year where it didn't happen. Especially when you watched what they felt like for huge chunks of the season.
Yep.
What was that big question? Can they do it on the road in the postseason? They've never had to do that before. Right. Well, all they did was win two road games, get here again, and I didn't know that DVOA stuff, but that makes perfect sense.
Right.
What they had to go through, beating the two teams that had been the best teams in the NFL all season in Baltimore and San Francisco. And in the Ravens, one of the best teams DVOA had ever measured. And the Niners had one of the best offenses that DVOA had ever measured. And it still doesn't matter. It's in the at the end of the day, at the end of the game, he still came through in those big moments. And I can't imagine, I am a fan of an NFL team, but being a fan of a contending NFL team, being a fan of the Niners or the Ravens or the Bills, and knowing that he's just going to be there forever, be there until your team probably falls apart.
Yeah.
That is a truly terrible reality that is facing so many franchises right
until
now.
Until he gets bored. Yeah, you know, again, you got Kelce got held to what, one catch in the first half?
One catch for 1 yard in the first half.
Run game wasn't getting going. They're making mistakes, punching themselves over and over. One huge play where Mahomes throws one of the prettier passes I've seen in person. It was a wobbler, but it was a, as far as the arc of that pass, that deep ball that he had to Hardman that came right towards us.
What a bizarre play when it happened. We didn't really know what to make of it because Gibson was in position right to break that ball up, and just he just sweet. Never caught it. He never caught it in the air.
And the next play, Pacheco fumbles, and it was just, oh, my God.
Well,
and
both teams had a fumble inside the 10. It almost was good because it just evens each other out. And I don't have to worry about, like, oh, well, if they didn't fumble inside the 10, because both teams did, they just erase each other.
And everyone wanted to take a turn fumbling a punt. You know, I thought that was the cool thing to do in Las Vegas, so might as well just try that. And then you got guys making plays. That's what's so funny. We're like, okay, Mahomes. Of course it's Mahomes. Then you got Juwan. It's like the Juwan Jennings, Mecole Hardman, Mike Pinnell, Leo Chanel, Javon Kinlaw, Jair Brown. These are the names I was writing out throughout this game. And not in my usual hipster, I got to throw out the third receiver blocking guy, anything like that. These were the guys making plays. So it's so funny in a Super Bowl that has all these stars. The brightest star, of course, shines in the end, and Kelce, especially in the second half. But all these quote-unquote role players had big moments. And, of course, it's like, really? This is what this game's going to unfold. The one with Taylor Swift added. The one with Kelce. The one with Chris Jones.
We're going to be talking about Mike Pinnell because it's a 16-13 finish. Thankfully, Patrick Mahomes saved us. Let's go through some of those moments down the back half. The final drive in overtime. They have that 4th-and-1 where they run the RPO with Kelce coming across. Mahomes keeps it. Yep. It's a great play call.
Yes.
That play specifically, that 4th-and-1, knowing they had to go for it, raises a pretty interesting conversation about the overtime rules.
Yes.
Because it's the first time we've had to face this situation where a coach had to decide after winning the toss, do I want the ball or do I want to kick it? Mm-hmm. The Niners decided they wanted the ball first because, as Kyle Shanahan said after the game, I wanted, if there was a third possession, to have it with sudden death. Sam Schwartzstein, one of our buddies from Amazon, who is a rules nerd, that's like what he does.
Yes.
He was tweeting about this.
It's after my own heart.
These are the decisions that you have to make. Do you want the information or do you want the sudden death advantage? And because the Chiefs had the information, they knew to go for it on that 4th down where the Niners did not go for it on their 4th and medium on their overtime possession. So that, I'm sure we'll have that conversation and replay that 1,000 times, but that 4th and 1 happens because it's a good play call. It also happens because the Chiefs knew they had to go for it.
Yep.
Also on that overtime drive, the 3rd and 6 completion to Rashee Rice against that cover zero look.
Yep.
Niners go twice in the second half to cover zero on clutch downs. There was the 3rd down to McKinnon on the final drive in the 4th quarter for the Chiefs where Mahomes checked into it. Mm-hmm. So it's cover zero twice. Mahomes beats it twice. And then you have that huge scramble to get down inside in the red zone, put them in a position to finish the game off, and they do.
And the other time they caught them, it was the 2-minute drive at the first half. I just thought of this. Remember they hit Rice on back-to-back plays.
Yeah.
One of those – remember, we were laughing because, like, Oren Burks, like, couldn't get lined up.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there was
another
blitz look, too. It's because they went to the blitz look, and then I think they followed it up with a tempo look, something of that sort. But, again, they, like, couldn't get lined up. But, yeah, those blitz looks were – they were trying to change it up. This 49ers defense several times did several things. Again, we'll get more into that in a sec. Changed the first play, they ran a 3-4 front. And I tweeted out, I got made fun of, and someone said, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to share at the dinner party, Nate. I'm going to share that the 4-3 base personnel 49ers ran a 3-4 in that first play. Yeah, that's going to really earn me some accolades at those parties. But that second half showed, or in that overtime drive especially, you talked about the OT, or I'm sorry, the RPO play that Mahomes keeps. And that's the adjustment that Andy Reid and Mahomes made was Nick Bosa was crashing the F down on everything from the backside. It's what he does. He's super aggressive. He's athletic enough to sometimes adjust. It's not – this is one of the things when you're a freak, you can do these things. You can break rules just like Mahomes can. So the Chiefs, what they did, twice ran those RPOs, the big run that Mahomes had, and then, of course, that huge 4th and 1.
There was the other play I wanted to point out, talking about just like the plays they're making in high leverage moments. 3rd and 7 on the final drive of the 4th quarter. Mahomes hits Kelce on that 3rd and 7 crosser. And that play, I think, really encapsulates the game in a lot of ways. Warner is on Kelce in man coverage on that play. Mm-hmm. They run a little mesh concept. Warner gets picked. He's open. Huge completion. Huge. They go down and score. But that we were wondering coming into the game. All right, if the Niners are just going to come out, play even fronts, and play a ton of zone, we think this version of the Chiefs offense, what they've shown in the playoffs, is going to pick them apart. Yep. We were wondering all week, what's the adjustment going to be? What's the adjustment going to be? And you noticed it, I don't know, probably halfway through the second quarter, yep. Like, this is exactly what they're doing. What did you see, and how did it apply to that 3rd-and-7 completion to Kelce?
I was having some deja vu from the Bucs Super Bowl when they beat the Chiefs. It was any time that the Chiefs isolated Travis Kelce and used him as a lone receiver, an X receiver. They do this all the time. He is one of the best true X receivers, even though he's a tight end. I was curious, okay, the 49ers like to run man coverage. They ran man coverage at an above-average rate on passing downs. Who are you going to man up with Kelce? So what the 49ers did was they walked Warner onto him and then had a safety run one double. Usually when a team runs one double, it's a corner and a safety.
Yeah.
The 49ers are like, no, we're going to have Fred Warner do it because he's physical. And this is exactly what the Bucs did a few years ago in the Super Bowl. They did two-man. But this version, what the 49ers did was one robber, one double, however you want to put it. But there's several adjustments off it. And this was... it was great because the 49ers had changeups off of it. They ran a straight cover two off of it.
Multiple Warner's times in the they flat. Just dropped into zone. And that it was actually a very good defensive game plan. It was great. It's like, what is the curveball going to be? And because it wasn't just those one double looks, there was a cover two off of it. Yep. I think they probably dropped into zone with him lined up that way at least three or four times.
Yes.
So I think that the plan they had was actually pretty sound. But this is what Mahomes and Reed do. Over the course of the game, they slowly start to figure it out, and they started to come up with answers down the back half of the game.
It was that last drive, yeah. So the adjustment was, okay, when you're running the one-double stuff, the best thing to do is create muck. Let them run away.
Yeah.
You're not going to win against bracketing on a traditional route unless it's kind of out of structure. So that crossing route was a great example of it. Then on the final play of regulation, they show that same exact shell, run the cover two, Warner gets physical with him, and they don't get the back shoulder fade. Then in OT, with the Chiefs finally, this is the thing. Andy Reid has seen every look possible. And Kyle Shanahan a little bit too, but Andy Reid has. So what he started doing was motioning a running back out to empty. That creates Kelce in the slot.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually spoke to what the 49ers, knowing that that's their game plan, they're like, oh, they had a check for that. And then the Chiefs proceeded to nickel and dime and hit a nice route. They had an answer to that. So fun little chess match on passing downs that got really leaned into, really cranked up in the second half. It was cool to see the Chiefs in real time during drives find different answers.
And there was the 3rd-and-10 to Kelce with about 10 minutes left in the game. And that was a play where the Chiefs, I think, they had a shift and then a motion, and the Niners had trouble lining up. So again, it was like, okay, if you're going to play these sorts of looks on third down where the one double looks and we have to worry about the man coverage you're going to play, a lot of moving parts.
Yes.
Where's the guy lining up? Is he in the slot? Is he outside? So those were the adjustments the Chiefs were making. It's like, let's just make it a little bit less static for them in those looks so they have to move as we're lining up.
It's an untraditional look. It's not a crazy coverage, but it's an untraditional look. A linebacker and a safety on the tight end.
Yes.
To me, trying to find an answer as a quarterback, I have to really rack my brain. Okay, so how does that play out like? And that's what Mahomes was trying to figure it out. He's like, okay, so what is my answer other than somebody else has to win? But I want to get Travis Kelce the ball. So that's what they're trying to figure out. And honestly, as that game was going, I think if the 49ers won this game, if they won by that field goal, Fred Warner had a Super Bowl MVP type performance this game. I thought he was fan-freaking-tastic. Not just the Kelce stuff, the sack at the end of the first half, Warner collisions Justin Watson, mucks up the whole mesh route.
The sack, he didn't get the sack. He caused the sack at the end of the first half.
He mucks up Watson. So because they're running another mesh concept, there's a lot of mesh type concepts from the Chiefs. That creates it all mucky in the middle. Then Mahomes has a double clutch. He ends up taking the sack. But over and over, he was running down screens. He saved one on Pacheco. That was huge. But he had a phenomenal game. It's just that you're going against Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, and Patrick Mahomes. They usually are going to find an answer.
One of the other things we were worried about with the Niners is, what is their run defense going to look like? They were really struggling against the run, especially in the playoffs, and teams really had some answers against them. The Lions and the Packers did, and they were fantastic against the run.
They're great.
19 running back runs for 59 yards. Mentioned it, 27% success rate. I was a little bit surprised that we didn't see more perimeter runs from the Chiefs.
Yes.
Because I think they ran three of them over the course of the entire game. One of them was the fumble, and I think that might have scared them off a little bit.
But the first play was a TFL. Yeah. So it's TFL fumble, so they're probably like, are we going to really go for the whole shebang?
But then they hit two of them. It was funny because I literally said it.
Yes.
I said to you when we were sitting there, I was like, I'm surprised we haven't seen more perimeter runs. And then it was, I think, the second to last drive.
Yeah.
They hit one for like a 9-yard gain to get down inside the 10 when they ended up kicking that field goal.
Yes.
So the Niners did a great job there. But again, just little tiny ideas that end up becoming important. After the fumbled punt, beautiful play design on the MVS touchdown. So MVS's lineup is the number one receiver. Kelsey's in the slot. They run a little switch release, and there's nothing that the Niners can do in that moment. Oren Burks is put in a really, really tough bind, and he's just not getting the depth he needs to on that MVS touchdown. We both said it in the moment. It's like, you're just beat there. Done. It's just a great play design. It's just a great call.
Yep, it was a switch verts. And really, again, this comes down to details. And again, it's I know what you know kind of thing, is MVS takes an inside release because it is a switch verts. And on that, the corner, Tre'Davious Ward, is dropping off. Because if he's going inside, somebody's going to replace him on the outside. Sure enough, he caught Kelsey.
Yep.
He did what he was supposed to do.
And the safety flew to the flat.
But the thing was, there's a shift and then a motion right before the snap. Oren Burks, backup linebacker, in there in sub personnel now. Not Dre Greenlaw. Yep. He just gets caught. First play, quick turnaround, quick change. And sure enough, he just gets caught. He's supposed to kind of fall off. But because of that stuff, because of the bump and the shifting, it changes the number count. This is what they do. If you just have that, we talk about the Shanoscope. Reed does this as well. If you have that slight hesitation, one guy's slow, one guy stopped, there's a wide open touchdown, and that helps him take the lead and gets the win.
Talking about all those tweaks and just, again, that Andy Reed being a part of the Chiefs always finding a way in these moments, this is a huge moment for him.
Yeah.
Three Super Bowl wins now. Yep. Five coaches ever have three Super Bowl wins. Five coaches all time. He's one of them. I mean, definitively the second best coach of his generation.
Yes.
If you look back, I mean, he took the job in Philly right around the time that Bill Belichick got hired.
98, 99.
Yeah. So that their 10 years almost completely overlap.
Yeah.
And now it's him, Belichick, and him, and I think a pretty big gap. And now the question is going to be not how much of a gap is there between him and the rest of the field. It's what is the gap going to look like between him and Belichick when it's all said and done.
Right. And now Mahomes is chasing Brady. Belichick is there. Brady is chasing Belichick. They might just go, hey, let's do this together. Yeah. We got this for the next decade. Let's try and push it.
And everyone that I talked to this week that covers the Chiefs or knows the Chiefs, all the stuff, the Andy Reid retirement rumors, and everyone was like, no, he's not slowing down. Like, he wants to keep doing this. I think he understands what sort of opportunity they have. And it doesn't sound like this is even something that's even crossed their mind with him, and even as he's getting into his 60s here.
I don't know if you ever played craps, but yes, you have. We played once together, but
we did,
not this week, but years ago. But when you play craps, sometimes you just, like, you might have a number and you're not rolling that point, but you're just keeping hitting all the other numbers. That's what the Chiefs feel like. They hit Mahomes, and then they're just like, let's just keep rolling. We're not crapping out. Yeah, let's just keep this going. What's that? Oh, let's give another. Yeah, I'm going to put another $5 on Kadarius Toney there. Oh, whatever. That didn't win, but everything else is winning right now. But why wouldn't you? And the tweaks that they're adding, even, again, this is quote unquote the down year, still a top six offense throughout the year, and they won another freaking Super Bowl. It's just, why wouldn't you? I would just keep doing this because the vibes just seem immaculate right now.
Keep stacking up Chiefs legacy talk. Kelsey has one catch for 1 yard in the first half. He finishes with 9 catches for 93. And not only the production and not only him being the answer in the biggest moments of this game, I think it's so telling that the Niners' main tweak, their main little adjustment, was Kelsey focused.
Yeah.
He still, at this stage of his career, is the number one thing that teams are trying to stop when they think about the Chiefs. And I just think that says so much about what sort of presence he is, what sort of gravity he still has, even at this age.
Oh, my God. Every motion, though, you can just feel because it shifts. Gravity is a great word. We usually talk about maybe with a three-point shooter, but even here we talk about speed. Like, Tyreek Hill's got so much gravity. Devontae Adams, Justin Jefferson, they run all this cloud coverage over there. But now when we see Kelsey with it, it's like a little motion coming in inside. Then you just see everybody shifting, the safety rotating down, all these types of things. But he's older. You know, he's our age. And he's getting
33.
He's older and older. And then he catches that crosser at the end of the half. And that was the fastest, I think, this Next Gen Stats said it was the fastest he's gone in 7 years.
Yeah. They did a great job of putting him in bubble wrap for a huge chunk of the season and making him ready for these moments. It was a very thoughtful bit of overall usage for the first two-thirds of the season, even for the whole regular season.
It must be nice to just get away with that when you can just kind of go, now we're going to get into it. And there was some tight end stuff. I saw some Blake Bell lead blocks. I was like, all right, here come the tight end stuff. But then it was just like, well, there's the tight end. There's Travis Kelce. There's him getting isolated in the slot again, getting screens. It's like, oh, yeah, same old game plan. Just give him the ball. Let him go.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS. You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The Chiefs offense comes up big at the end of the game, but the Chiefs defense was excellent.
Yes.
And their plan, yes. The other side of the ball, Chiefs offense against the Niners defense, I don't think we really hit that. You know, there were a lot of elements to it that were hard to predict. Yep. We didn't know how it was necessarily going to go. I thought the Chiefs offense had a harder time than I maybe anticipated coming into the game because of, one, the pass rush. The pass rush was really good for the Niners early in the game.
Yep.
It slowed down, so I think that ended up becoming important. But two, I just think that the Niners defense was playing with their hair on fire.
Yep.
The other side of the ball, though, the Chiefs defense against the Niners offense, this is what we expected. They loaded up against the run on early downs, and they said, when we get into passing downs, we are going to bring a lot of heat. Yep. And that's exactly what went down. 31 carries for 110 yards for the Niners, okay?
Okay.
Negative 0.33 EPA per rush. That's a great starting point if you're going to beat this team.
Yes.
3.5 yards per carry with a guy with Christian McCaffrey on the field is huge. They get them into third down, 3 of 12 for the Niners on third down.
That's how you have to do it.
It was exactly how you want to play this team.
Yep.
The one adjustment, though, we knew they were going to bring heat.
Yeah.
But this is a team that even when they blitz, it's a lot of zone behind the blitzes. And it felt like, I don't have the numbers on it, I'm sure we'll see it over the next couple days. Anecdotally, it felt like there was more man behind the blitzes, and that's why all those in-breakers to Debo, there were so many contested throws in this game. Debo got 11 targets. He had 3 catches because McDuffie was gloving him up every single time they tried to go to him in a late down.
They were so, McDuffie was fantastic tonight.
He was incredible.
Yes, they were physical. Watching the back that Dolphins game in Germany in week 9 and seeing how physical the outside corners were with the Chiefs, saw a lot of that tonight. That's base downs. That's first and second down. That's when they're running it. More cover two, more cloud looks, more lock coverages. But like you said, when you got the passing downs, those more man situations, Debo got targeted 11 times, which was great process for my props, by the way. Only ended up with 3 catches, and it was because McDuffie was swarming him.
Yeah.
Or DB was swarming him every time.
The amount of tight windows they had to throw the ball into the entire game, and it's why it was a Juwan Jennings game.
Because
he comes up so big on third downs.
He's
he ran great routes
he's
today.
So good.
He was really good today.
He made some money today.
But it's still, he's a free agent.
Yeah.
But that's still not the game you want to play.
No.
When you're having to hit all those tight window throws, that's what this Chiefs team did all year. Snead, McDuffie, that combination has been phenomenal, and they showed up in the biggest moments when they were needed most.
All the DBs. They made the run game a slog, which some of those cloud coverages, again, they're turning back inside. Leo Chanel was fantastic in the run game.
Leo Chanel and Mike Pinnell. Mike Pinnell had a huge game.
Rico goes, is that 69 again?
Every single time it was like, is that him again?
They're the ones that forced the fumble initially. I mean, I thought those two, they really did though. Not just jokingly. Like I've never seen a defensive player take it to George Kittle in the run game.
Yeah.
And I'll probably, I'm going to watch it, but anecdotally, it was 2 or 3 plays I saw. There's Leah Chanel crushing Kittle in, pushing him back in, and not letting the runs get to the edge, and you're taking the 49ers out of their game. Now they're getting to I formation stuff. Okay, that's fine, but it was wind back concepts. Remember, I kept saying to you, I was like, man, they keep running this play. I think it's 0-3. We saw those toss plays, and he's following Juszczyk as he's winding back. So they're taking him out of their game. We're taking your fastball away. You cannot get to
it. You're taking your fastball away, though, but theoretically, they should be able to win those matchups against the interior of the Chiefs' defensive line. All the non-Chris Jones players replacement level guys. Mike Pennell was on the practice squad.
Yeah,
he got called up.
33.
He got called up in this game because Joe Tooney got put on IR. Yeah. Like, that's who we're talking about here. So the game plan, like, all right, we saw teams gash them with interior runs over the course of the playoffs. Let's do that. It was guys stepping up and not allowing to happen. I think that's why
tackling.
It was big. Yeah.
More great tackling. I mean, that was throughout the night. They limited those yak opportunities and yards after contact opportunities. And I want to look at some of the front stuff, and I don't want to get too far ahead of myself on it, but some of the fronts were interesting where they were running a quote-unquote rush front, meaning 2-3 techniques, the Chiefs were, but then having Chanel outside. So they were kind of – they were daring them to run inside. Yeah. They were truly just pinching them. If you ever played Madden, they were doing like LB up. Spreading out that line, but then putting Chanel at the line of scrimmage. Usually when teams do that, they're doing it under front. So it was just a little tweak, and I kind of want to watch more of it. But again, that's specs. That's just that funkiness. It's just another thing where you're like, as a team, you're like, okay, what's my answer? So they start running counter, but then you're taken again. That got limited as guys got blown up by Chris Jones and Carl Loftus because those are more boom-bust runs. And again, you're just, again, taking away the answers that they had naturally.
Spags had a fantastic postseason. He had a fantastic season.
Yeah.
I think this is, for a lot of the other guys on the Chiefs, for Mahomes, for Kelce, for Andy Reid, they're stacking up the resume.
Yeah.
This is just adding on to what they already are and what they've already done. For Spags, I think that this season overall and what he did over the last few games has put him in a different stratosphere. It puts him in a different conversation for all-time coordinators, all-time coaches. I mean, what he has done, I said this after the Ravens game, and I truly do believe it, and I think that this game is another example of it. Getting Mahomes, the trade up for Mahomes is the most important thing the Chiefs will have ever done. It's the most important thing the Andy Reid era did. But them going out and getting Steve Spagnuolo after the 2018 season and locking down that side of the ball and getting the most out of their defensive personnel all the way through, when they were built a different way, that was making sure, can we get to average? Can we get to 18th? But as they've retooled the building of the roster, and as they restocked the defense after the Tyreek Hill trade, this was about, can we create an elite defense as currently constructed? It's young, it's cheap, but we invested in it. And that's what they did. Yeah. They went from having a team, can we get to, let's get 4 or 5 high leverage stops a game, that'll be enough, to, can we be a team that dictates the game on defense? And that's exactly what happened this year. And that isn't possible if Steve Spagnuolo isn't the guy on that side of the ball.
We used to call it, when we first started the show, we'd be like, oh, they're like a trap and run team in basketball. Yeah. Okay, score, 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 trap them. Okay, we gave up an easy three, whatever. We're going to get right back. Easy layup, all that. But then you watch this year and you see him, it's kind of his hand-picked players, or at least the players that were picked, going like, okay, I'm going to use you here. Chanel is the greatest example of that because he's such a unique player. But you just have to credit Spags. Some of that stuff is smoke and mirrors, and that's what covered up some of the lesser players that he had before, the Dan Sorensens of the world, because the guy gave him a mention once a month on the show. But then watching it, and everyone could go, well, of course, they hit on all these players right now. Spags highlights them. He gets their best out of them. Hey, L'Jarius Sneed, you can just be as physical as hell. L'Jarius Sneed went from a slot pressure guy to a outside ass-kicking corner, and it starts with coaching. I mean, that helps in making these guys play confident. That Shanahan offense runs so much shifting and motioning, and they do so much, I mean, as at least Spags does, they do so much of funky looks, and all those guys are communicating. There's several times I saw the DBs after a shift all signal the same thing at the same time, which means they knew what that look was. That tells me, because that's what defense says, it's all responsive. So if you're in this formation, we're going to check into this. The Chiefs were all on the same page, no matter what the looks were. It was fantastic. Only thing that was getting them was when they motioned CMC to the slot. I realized that was popping their heads a little bit. I was waiting for more of it, but they generated 9 unblocked pressures on blitzes today.
And 2 of those unblocked pressures were game-changing plays. Yep. The one where McDuffie came unblocked on the third down to force the field goal, and then the one where Jones came unblocked to force the field goal. Those unblocked pressures changed the complexion of the game.
Yep. And Chris Jones had 6 pressures today. What was our number? 5?
Yeah, it's 5. Can you have a guy who can create 5 pressures every single game?
6.
And him and Nick Bosa both. Bosa was a monster for huge chunks of this game. If they had won, we would be talking a lot about the impact that he had on the game.
Jones had several near sacks and everything, but they were constantly getting pressure. It felt like they were just taking turns on the interior, the right side, which we kind of figured. But that has a limitation on the offense. The 49ers were starting to keep seven in, or George Kittle was having to full-time block a lot. And I think maybe some injuries with Kittle was part of that, too. It eases load throughout the game, but blocking is pretty tough, too, so I don't know about that. But, again, you're taking away what they want to do. You're dictating the game. You're holding the pen last. You remember, I love that phrase you've always used with it, and I think that's exactly what they did. Even if this is usually a look where the offense get them, they found answers that worked.
Talk about Legarius Sneed. That becomes my biggest question for the Chiefs this offseason. He's a free agent. So is Chris Jones.
Yeah.
I just assumed that Sneed would be gone, that he would just be one of those guys that as you pay Mahomes,
guys,
as you have some big money guys on the offensive line, the way you pay Joe Tooney, the way you pay Jawan Taylor, this is just a guy that you have to lose.
Yeah.
You get a compensatory pick back. The way he played, though, I almost feel like you have to bring him back. I don't think that as you're currently constructed, the model of team that you have, the feel of team that you have, I think he's almost too valuable for you to let him go.
Where's he at right now? Is he 28?
He's 27.
27?
So, and they have $24 million in cap space heading into next year.
Okay.
Mahomes has a massive roster bonus.
Yeah.
So he has a $35 million roster bonus this year. I assume they will convert that to a signing bonus. So they'll get another $30 million in space. So theoretically, they will be able to bring some of these guys back if they want to.
I would. I know it's easy for me
to say. I'm telling you, he played at such an elite level
that
I feel like it's almost a no-brainer. If you had asked me before the season, which guy did they bring back, Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed, I don't think it would have even been a conversation.
Yeah.
Now, I kind of think it might have to be Sneed, which is crazy.
And he's not even a blitz merchant where he only has to guard for 2 seconds. He was taking it to some of the best receivers. He got man coverage assignments on the guys this year. He was a true number one lockdown. We don't get that much anymore.
No.
And he really could do that. Plus, again, I've mentioned this before from his prior years, he's a great blitzer. It works for the Spags defense well. He's extremely smart. You can just see that. It's very prevalent just how his gamemanship or understanding the game flow and everything. So I'm with you. It's like before he's like, oh, he's a fine player. He's a nice player. Nice role player. Someone can get him nice in free agency. He can be a nice like number two for you. You know, can do some blitz stuff. But this year it was just like, oh, no. He was my second team All-Pro. I mean, and I think he deserved it.
Steven Ruiz just walked by. He's the happiest man in the building right now because he gets to keep covering the NFL. So he's having a really good day.
He really is.
Let's get to the Niners. All right. So this is a team that was set up to win this game, was built to win this game.
Yep.
They felt like one of the best teams in the league all year. They were favored coming into this game, even against a Chiefs team that looked so much better in the playoffs. And I think that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the body of work that they had put together and what type of team we were talking about, this always felt like a team that it was Super Bowl or bust.
Absolutely.
And it busted.
Yeah.
It's, again, almost to no fault of their own in some regard because of the team that they played against. And I think that was the conversation we had against Kyle Shanahan coming into this game. It was, he probably has more riding on this in the way that we talk about him than anyone else in the game. If he wins it, he enters rarefied air and it's just a different class of coaches.
Yes.
If he loses it, that conversation changes. But sometimes over the last 20 years, we've seen these teams come along that just run into the wrong quarterback at the wrong time. And that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have this Niners team that was truly put together to do it this year. All those stars on huge contracts, and they fall short. And I think now the question is, what comes next? Like, what does the fallout look like?
I know. And then now we've got Purdy talk starting soon, and we got a lot of questions to start answering. And kind of felt like you said, it kind of felt like that going in. But of course, the questions I see right before we started the show on Twitter is, why do you throw the ball so much again? It was like, oh, here we are again. Shanahan after close losses. Why did you throw the ball so much? I'll figure it out in all 22. I don't want to give a definitive statement or anything like that.
But also, the run game wasn't mowing people down.
It wasn't.
They averaged 3 yards a carry with the running backs.
And they had explosive plays if they go three, went to the right spot. But it was that I just it's that's what's gonna linger. Just like the 28-3 game. That's gonna linger. Why'd you throw it on that one play? That's what people are gonna remember. Fair or unfair, that's how it goes. But I mean this offense was freaking phenomenal. It was legit. Every stat we look at that Robert and I looked on True Media, top 12 in every metric since 2000. This is an elite top 1% offense that you're gonna see. Its defense plays extremely well for how they've looked recently. And this happens. And you get some luck, like just a little luck. Yes, you had the turnovers too, the fumble and everything. But, you know, you hang in there, your pass rush is getting there, and you still end up short. It's just, like you said, it's just not fair. It just isn't, because you're going against that other quarterback and that other team that has answers and figures out answers.
The only game management question I think you'd have about Shanahan is they did not call timeout at the end of the half. They let all that time tick down while the Chiefs were driving. Could they have used their timeouts, potentially stole possession back, knowing the Chiefs were going to get the ball after the half? But other than that, I don't think this is a, oh, man, another Kyle Shanahan,
you know, game management,
mess when we get into the biggest moments.
Even the overtime taking the ball one, I think that's a coin flip decision
I think by most people that have studied this, it is kind of a 50-50 proposition.
I'll just give my answer to it. I look at it as more like college overtime, where you want to see what you need to get and go second.
I think it makes sense.
But seeing smarter people discuss it, and I understand, and you bringing up the third possession stuff that Shanahan said, I understand that argument as well. But, you know, that's interesting. It was fun. It was a fun example. Yeah. We got to see live because it was another example. And even us, we're going, wait, time's not going to run out, right? We just had, because there's two monster drives.
Well, we've never seen it before.
I know,
so
right?
They get
to finish the drive, right?
When the clock was ticking down, we were asking each other, like, wait, what happens? What happens if the clock runs out? The game just would have kept going.
You get to finish your initial possession.
Yeah, the rule is if you don't finish the second possession, it just goes to a second overtime. Yep. So the idea that we almost saw a double overtime Super Bowl is insane.
I know. I was actually kind of excited for it. I kind of wanted it to happen a little bit, then they scored. It was like they had that flair for the dramatic, too, because it was like the clock's ticking down. It's like they can't help themselves but do it. Oh, even that touchdown was almost a callback to last year's Super Bowl. Doing a little motion in the red zone, messing with the motion rules for the defense and catching them. And they got him. Even Kelsey knew it was automatic. His route on it, he just took two steps and looked at the Jumbotron because he knew it was automatic. He was like, touchdown. That's it. Hey, they score it right. Like, yeah, but again, there was another callback. And again, Andy Reid's really good at this. He can find answers when he wants to.
How do you feel Purdy played?
He didn't really do much to me. I thought some of his creation moments, like the one to Juszczyk.
The scramble and then the play to Juszczyk on that drive were his two biggest plays of the game.
His
and then
best
the little dump off on the third down. There was a big blitz, and he found CMC in the flat on
that
same
one
drive.
On the catch and run, And then he had a boot to Kittle, one of Kittle's few catches, where pressure came right at him on the boot. Another thing the Chiefs did well, played the boots really well. Yep. But came right at him, and he kind of adjusted the throw. It was a short gain, but it was from our angle. I was like, I think I even said it out loud. I was like, oh, that was a hell of a throw. It was like, because he threw his sidearm around the guy. So a couple moments out of structure, I thought was best ones. That one to Juszczyk, he broke off Carl Loftus on, I think, on it. He made Chris Jones miss a couple times. So those were his best plays. But I thought throwing-wise, you know, a lot of tight windows, and I thought he kind of a couple that he missed. That was it.
One of the things that has crept up over the playoffs to me is his stature in the pocket it was a thing. Over the course of the playoffs. We were saying it all game. You kept harping on it. The pocket's getting real tight.
Real tight.
The pocket's getting real tight. When teams have pushed the pocket against him, I think the Packers game is a very good example. Yep. They had all those 5-0 fronts that they were using. When they were closing in on him, he's not a creative thrower.
Yep.
He's not going to be able to back up in the pocket. He's not going to be able to create things as that space gets condensed. And I think we saw that a lot again in this game.
Right. And I think that getting it over, this is where the height stuff comes too, is everyone thinks, oh, you're just throwing over the middle or throwing or can't see past the guys. So when it gets tight, it's giving yourself room for error.
Yeah.
If I naturally have longer arms, I'm going to be able to work around a body like this. And that's where height and kind of size stuff, do I get pushed off the thing? I actually think he's pretty sturdy. Like, I will give that. He's a built guy.
Yeah.
Seeing him in person, he is a good athlete. I'm going to give him more credit than I did
before. He is a good athlete.
He is. Seeing him in person, see him getting some corners and stuff like that, it was impressive to see him in person. But again, like you said, when you get the interior pressure stuff and that, again, you feel it, especially for a team that wants to attack over the middle, that's hard.
Yeah.
I have a body here and I have to throw right in front of me, but there's something here, here, and here. So that means I have to throw sidearm to throw in front of me. That's just,
and if you're not backing up in the pocket and buying yourself space, that's going to be difficult to do, and that's just not his game.
And it's because they're taught. Watch Jimmy G. Watch anyone play in this offense, these types of offense. You stand here, you deliver here.
Because it's about timing.
It's all about timing.
Have some of these other offenses where there is a little bit of – I've said it a million times. This is the phrase I keep coming back to. Pocket. It's pocket playmaking.
Yes.
Pocket playmaking. It's not about creation outside of the pocket. He can do that.
Yes.
We've seen him do that. It's honestly one of his best selling points. Mm-hmm. But he's one of those guys where pocket playmaking is just there's something left to be desired because he's not overly skilled.
Right.
He was Mr. Irrelevant. Like even if he's outpaced that in a lot of ways, at the end of the day, he's not an overly physically talented quarterback. So when you put him in these situations, I think these are the results that you see.
And this is, too, is they were getting forced to drop back more, and not just because of, like, game script or anything like that, but just the defenses that Spags were playing. They were going to make him throw the ball more and more and more. And this is where you can see some of the limitations, the ceiling of when you don't have that menu that where you can just keep dropping back. You can keep adjusting your protection, getting to the right call. We can check from this drop back to this drop back. The Shanahan offense is more going to be the designery plays that are the perfect look against the perfect thing, as opposed to letting a player kind of point and find the right direction. It felt like a lot tonight, especially when you're going against the Spags, a Todd Bowles, type defense, any of those types of defenses, they can, again, take away what you want to do. All right, do this one thing over and over. You can get it once, twice, three times. Do it a dozen times. One quarterback out there can, and that's where you can see some limitations sometimes with Purdy's game in this offense right now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking at the Niners' construction for next year, right now they're slated to be about $3.7 million over the cap.
Yep.
Trent Williams, $31.5 million. Debo Samuel, $28.6 million. Eric Armstead, $28.3 million. Fred Warner, $24.5 million. George Kittle, $21.2
million. Yeah.
They got a lot of expensive pieces.
Yeah, they do.
They can offset that because their quarterback makes $1 million.
Yep.
But somewhere they're going to have to move some money around because this is a team with holes. I mean, they have a couple guys hitting free agency, a lot of depth pieces, Juwan Jennings.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, how do they move some money around and how aggressive can they be in trying to fill some of those holes? They're getting draft capital back this year, so they're going to be on a better playing field than they've been to restock the roster. They're not going to have to use third-round picks on kickers because they only have third-round picks. So most of this team is still coming back, but it still feels like this might have been their best shot. And they're going to have to do it as a slightly diminished version of themselves if they're going to do it.
It's just impossible to put together always perfectly. Like the Chiefs ended up winning and everything, but that offense felt like a slog the whole year. This year, this 49ers offense, even in the losses, even in the quote unquote bad Purdy games, which are the exact same games, they were chugging on people, marching on people, and the defense had flaws, but they were more than good enough. There was an above average defense that sometimes very good at this throughout this year. But yeah, like, this is where the losses come. This is where, can you find another Jennings? Can you find another, all these types of role players that do so much in this offense that are kind of hand selected? Like you said, they have more draft capital. Their 49ers are impossible to predict in preseason. This is the same team that went out and signed Hargrave last season.
Well, that's what I mean.
They're impossible to predict what they're going to do. They're going to trade. They're going to sign.
They're
going
to find some creative way to make sure, let's keep pushing and keep pushing. And I actually think that's a smart way to do it. They know the window is now, and they know that this core of pieces is going to come back. Ayuk, we'll see what happens when they have to decide to pay him, but he's back on the roster next year. There's so many guys that those decisions, they can keep pushing them off.
Right.
This Niners team, as we understand it, this offense, as we understand it, is coming back next year. They can pick a guard in the whatever round, you know? So I do think that they will be back, but when you get this close with this sort of team, with an offense that looks the way that it did when it was firing on all cylinders, it's still hard not to look at this season as a missed opportunity.
Absolutely. Oh, man. I think... Remember they lost to the Ravens and we were like, you know, the Washington game happened and it was like, okay. And then the bye week happened and the playoffs were like, we took a deep breath and looked at this team. I was like, yeah, it seems good, huh? And when they entered the playoffs, I was like, the 49ers are actually way up there, guys. We kind of forgot for a split second that this team's way up. But that's, and then the playoffs had kind of some up and down moments, the first half against the Lions, for early against the Packers. And so I don't want to take away what the season actually was. This was, yes, it ended in a disappointment, but the rest of this year was a resounding success, at least to my eyes. This was, again, the vision of Shanahan's offense. This is what he wants, and you can see a lot. So again, it'll be interesting to see what this next step is and what they feel they need to upgrade, what they feel they need to find a new piece or find a new addition.
And you can say all those wonderful things about the Niners and acknowledge how good they were, how good this offense is, and how good this offense will probably continue to be. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that they are now playing in an era where the guy on the other side exists.
Yes.
And if you're going to be in these games in the biggest moments and it's going to be close, it's hard not to see him on the other side and just expect the outcome that we eventually landed on.
Yep.
And I know that's not nuanced or interesting analysis, but this is how it has now been for the last 20 years in the NFL. There was one team in New England that did it, and now there's a team in Kansas City that's already done it more consistently, which is absolutely terrifying. Yep. But this is now the set of operations and what the umbrella that's going to be hanging over the league for the next 5, 7, 10 years because he exists. It's just that simple.
I think we all thought we were going to get a deep breath from another dynasty and everything. No. Let's just get right back into it. I think we all have to give one every generation. But that at least they're in the NFC, and that's another thing. And they took advantage of a down year this year. Not took advantage, but they were the class of the NFC in a down NFC year, that's going to get a little harder. But at least they're not in the AFC, which is just quarterback legend centric.
We'll see what happens in the NFC.
And then
the Niners, the Rams were not supposed to be good this year, right?
Yes.
The Rams were not supposed to be good. The Rams spent less on their roster and cash than any team in the league.
No, this is great.
And the Rams were a playoff team and dangerous. The Lions, theoretically, they should keep building.
Right.
They have financial flexibility. They have a young roster. The Packers, a team that gave them all they could stand in the playoffs, they were, I think, 31st or 30th in cash spending in the NFL this year. Yeah. They were another reset team that, in theory, should be even better moving forward.
Yes.
So this was probably the worst year you were going to see in the NFC. Yeah. The Cowboys fell off in the biggest moments. The Eagles fell off down the stretch. So even if the NFC isn't the AFC, I could see a world where the NFC gets even better moving forward, and that path becomes more difficult.
That's what I was getting at, especially all the quarterbacks that might be entering the NFC. You might have 1-2 go NFC, you know, Caleb and Drake May or Daniels. Apparently, that's a thing now. But also, you got Vikings. Does Kirk come back there? They can just totally revamp. The Vikings offense was legit one of the best while Kirk was healthy, and Justin Jefferson, who knows what's going on in the NFC South. But the other three divisions, though, I mean, but really, what do you say right there? Four teams I feel better about at this point about this next year in the NFC than I did maybe last year.
Yeah.
So that, again, naturally, it's just going to make it a slog. It's going to make it much, much harder.
I truly can't believe that as we wrap this season up and we saw what the Chiefs were for stretches of this year, that we're sitting here with their logo on the board, with that Chiefs color confetti on the field.
Boys playing after the game again.
It was so hard to picture this, and maybe it shouldn't have been. And maybe we all learned a very important lesson this year about what this team is and when it really matters, when we should start paying attention and start making definitive statements and forming definitive opinions about the Chiefs, maybe post-Christmas.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Or we had our little, like, I would say a 30-second like debate segment. And I was like, oh, I'm picking the Chiefs. You pick the Ravens. And I like 10 seconds. I'm like, yeah, I kind of feel better about the Ravens still, even though I was arguing with the Chiefs because they'll figure it out, right? They'll figure it out. And in the regular season, they lose to the Raiders. I'm like, they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. And they freaking still haven't figured out. They still had sloppy moments for two and a half quarters.
They still won
the Super Bowl. They didn't win a big game on Monday night, a big game on Thursday night, just a divisional round game. The Super Bowl against the class of the NFC. Just, it must be very frustrating for other teams and everything and fans of other teams, but to watch it, at least a neutral fan perspective like mine, it's really cool to watch greatness and watch these guys just step up in these moments and do it
so amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And your eyes can glaze over, and I tend to be guilty of that, where as a team just has this unrelenting greatness over time, it's hard to find new things to say about them. It's hard to find new ways to analyze them.
Thank you, Spags, this year for helping us out.
Thank you, Spags. In reality, though, all of these great teams that sustain it, there are little differences. Yeah. There are little nuances every single year. For the Chiefs this year, it was the defense. But even with Mahomes, it was the way he's seeing the game, him checking into that McKinnon play on that third down against that cover zero look. His just grasp of everything that's going on, there's always going to be something new to appreciate a team like this as they go on this sort of ride. And this is a year where I think they stacked up even more than we could have anticipated.
Yeah, that's the lights went off.
Right? And the lights go off is...
look at that timing.
The lights going off is... Our sign that it's time to get out of here.
That's a stand-up comedy. The lights flashing at us. Okay, you got to wrap it up. No, greatness is very, very fun to watch in person. I'm just telling you guys right now.
A fantastic season. Guys, thank you to everyone who watched all year. Thank you to everyone who supported us. I can't tell you. I'm sitting there before the game. I'm like getting emotional talking about this. I'm sitting there before the game. It's my 9th Super Bowl. And just being able to be here and the fact that we wouldn't be able to do this without all of you supporting us. The idea that we've been able to form this little community of people who really love the show and people who support the show. I know that this isn't a guarantee. I know that we don't deserve this necessarily. So I feel grateful every single time we get to have one of these moments because I know that it didn't have to be like this. And that means a ton to me. I know it means a lot to you. So thank you to every single person who listened to the show this year. Thank you to every single person who contributed to the show this year. Zach Kiefer was sitting next to me during the Super Bowl. I can't even tell you how much I appreciate his time. Sando and Randy for everything that they've done, what Dane has done on Prospects to Pros. We are so lucky to work with the people
He's over here.
Ken Garrison is here producing our show. Alex Sample here. Beller, who's at home and has done an unbelievable job. Tanika, who helped produce a couple of the other shows on the feed.
Marissa coming in relief.
Marissa's coming back now. We have a phenomenal team, and we have a phenomenal group of people who love the show and support it. So thank you very, very much. And we're not going anywhere. We'll have a couple more shows this week, but the Super Bowl always feels like, you know, you're putting an exclamation point or a period on the end of the sentence. And I thought the sentence played out pretty well this year.
I agree. And also thank you, everyone. Every single person that came up and said hi.
Yeah.
Means so much, guys. Like, you have no idea. Sometimes going to the bathroom and, you know, just, you know, give me a second. Give me a second. But I will say, you guys, it's so cool just to hear your comments. What you guys pick up? What you guys think is interesting? It's interesting to me. I love it. I love hearing from you guys. Can't thank you enough. Thank everybody that helps us out with the show. Thank Robert because he's the best. And this was great. Thank you guys for another year. This was truly, truly fun. Thank you so much.
We'll be back with some more stuff this week. But for now, that is all we have from Allegiant Stadium and Super Bowl 58. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you soon.
This was the Athletic Football Show.